Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from Wild Turkey Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. Let's tune in to their one-on-one with Jamal, a real bartender from Old Fourth Ward in Atlanta.
I really get into the backstory of whatever I'm pouring. Out of respect, there are literally years of experience behind these bottles. Wild Turkey, same recipe since 1942. If you want a true classic, this is what you want to order.
Wild Turkey. Wild Turkey Distilling Company, Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Copyright 2020, Campari American, New York, New York. Never compromise, drink responsibly.
Hey everyone, welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast and videocast if you happen to be watching on YouTube. It is Monday, November 16th. And after week 10, Chris, a lot of crazy stuff going on. My theme for me was like, some of the foreseeable stuff happened that I didn't give it enough weight, whether it's weather or injuries or just cover, like wide receiver corner matchups, things like that happened. I knew it could have happened. The possibility was there and I didn't weigh it enough.
Yeah, but it's funny. It's like sometimes people bench or reduce exposure in DFS, for example, to stars like DK Metcalf. And they're like, yeah, Jalen Ramsey's guarding him. You got to reduce. And then he goes off nonetheless. And you're like, what the hell?
Yeah.
So it happens both ways. The weather, though, I think with weather, it's all the marginal guys and the matchups have to be punished. I think with the DK Metcalf or someone like that, you never know how it's going to go. I guess it hurts a little bit. I mean, nobody really torches Jalen Ramsey, but a couple guys have had all right games against him. And I think part of it was just that Russell Wilson, he was sacked six times. He was just like under assault the whole game.
Yeah, he was so, running for his life. And one of my theories is that without a credible running game, you know, people are just teeing off on Wilson. When they don't have Carson, they don't have Hyde, you know, those running backs, as it turns out, actually do matter a little bit. We barely saw any DJ Dallas. They decided for some reason Alex Collins was a thing yesterday. Their offensive line isn't the same. They had some injuries last week, and you know Buffalo made them run ragged. And I think that is a big aspect of it there too, is they are failing to adjust to that. They're overwhelmed right now. And of course, the Rams are a bad team to be overwhelmed against.
Right. It's a road game with the quarterback getting sacked six times and being under assault all game, and then he's supposed to get those long developing routes to Metcalf. There's one where I thought Ramsey kind of interfered. They showed a replay. He was kind of pushing on him a long way down the field. Yeah. And Metcalf dove and got his hands on it and just missed it. But he's also throwing, you know, he's got to get rid of the ball earlier because there's so much pressure. Maybe he puts a little more air under that and that's a touchdown. So it's hard to factor in everything. I mean, the Rams have a good defense overall, one of the best in the league. And Wilson's line is in trouble. And as you mentioned, the running backs don't exist. And he's going against Ramsey. So maybe all those in totality should have been considered. If you have Metcalf, obviously in a season long, you're not going to sit him against anybody. But like, you know, if you're using him in DFS, But I wouldn't just say like it's obvious. I mean, it's kind of there's a lot of things going into that.
Yeah, yeah. But as Metcalf and Wilson go, so goes my primetime team. So
right.
it hurts, especially because I lost OBJ. I have Rojo on my bench. We'll talk about that in a second.
So did I. Two out of my three leagues that I have, I had on my bench. I mean, you can't count on them. I mean, you get benched any moment for, you know, you can get six or seven carries in a game. It was very hard to know.
Yeah, that's right. But yeah, and the other thing is, so that was, I thought, you know, there was some foreseeability to that, but you're right. There are, you know, sometimes you overcome that too. You know, Stephon Diggs overcame the Patrick Peterson matchup, for instance. You know, he was able to overcome that.
On his last play, basically.
Yeah, but he had like 90 yards and he had like eight or nine catches, maybe even 10 catches. He wasn't catching a lot of deep balls, but yeah, that last catch and that last throw was pretty sick. Only to be overcome by Kyler Murray, of course, and Hopkins. But, yeah, anyways, going back to the weather, though, it was funny, though. The weather was an issue. The Cleveland-Houston game, you know, good players were shut down. You know, Deshaun Watson was shut down because of this. Fuller pretty much was shut down because of this. The entire Houston offense was just, ugh, horrible.
Yeah, that was an ugly game. And obviously Chubb, you know, could have got a second touchdown and really run up the score for me, and I needed those points. And due to a glitch, I actually had Mayfield in that lineup instead of Danny Dimes. I was trying to switch, but it was like right before lineup, and the internet was slow, and I couldn't get him in.
Oh no!
So I lost 17 points, almost 18 points from that, and then Chubb. But I still won because Alvin Kamara solves a lot of ills.
Yes, he does.
So that was pretty good. But yeah, well, you know, I mean, obviously, when you have a Mayfield type or a Landry type and the weather's bad, bench without conscience. I mean, there's no reason to even hope that it's going to go well, right? It's right. Only the Metcalf Wilson types that you would adjust from, you know, that you would be hesitant to adjust if there's something that comes up.
Yeah. I don't even have Watson or Fuller in any of my leagues, but like in terms of my rankings, like I downgraded him. Watson moved down from like 5 to 10, but it wasn't enough, you know? And that's the thing. It's like, oh, but then again, you look at Pittsburgh and the Steelers did just, you know, they may not have had as extreme weather issues, but they had weather issues too. And it certainly didn't hurt Ben and the Steelers. That's for sure.
Yeah. That's a weird game though, because the Bengals shut down the run completely. And then they just said, okay, fine. We'll just torch you pass. Well, and then
yeah, they were down to three healthy corners. Mackenzie Alexander suffered a concussion in that game. They had other injuries prior to that. Trey Waynes hasn't played a snap all season long for them. That was one of their big offseason signings. I think it kind of was a cumulative effect. Plus, the offense and special teams were so terrible that the defense was on the field the whole time. Like, the Bengals shut down the Steelers' first couple of drives, but it just kept on, like, three and out, three and out, three and out. Fumble on the punt. You know, it's just, come on. You know, that's just, it's all over after that. You know, it just got uglier as, of course, the game went on. And Burrow was getting beat up at the end of that game. Why he was in there, I have no freaking idea. But, you know, I'm not a quitter. Okay, great. Well, you know what? The head coach has to be the adult and say, you know, you're coming out. You know,
right.
There's nothing left in this game. They wasted a sweet fake punt play in a game where they're already down like 30-9. It's like, what are you doing? Why are you doing that?
Is Zach Taylor a crap coach? He's kind of desperate now because he knows he could get fired at the end of the year, wants to get a couple of less lopsided laws. I mean, what's he doing? Like, why is he doing stuff like that?
He's a vast middle, but, he's certainly nothing special. You know, he's making some decisions I'm not very impressed by. I'll say that.
So, yeah, because the Joe Burrow thing, and you tweeted about it, you know, that he's going down the Andrew Luck path or the David Carr path, both number one overall picks also, and just got so beat up that, I mean, Luck was great, but he's so beat up. I mean, if Luck were still around, he'd be one of the best QBs in the league. You know, I mean, he's an amazing quarterback, but he just had to retire early because he just couldn't take the beatings. And it seems like a perfect game to get him out of there. The other thing is the Bengals are not contending, unlike the Giants. So there's really no reason to, there's really no reason to force it at all with them. And also AJ Green, 5 targets, no catches, no yards. T Higgins lighting it up. I mean, it's over for AJ Green, right? I mean, the only reason AJ Green got as much work as he has is because of his stature in the organization and who he was. But they know now, right? They know this is it. Like, all that sort of happy talk about, oh, he really looks like himself. He looks great. We're excited to get him involved. Like, it's T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd. I mean, John Ross won't play cornerback. I made a joke on the Real Man Wood account that he should roid up to left guard. Real Man would roid up and play left guard, right. John Ross. Take quite a bit of roiding for him to get to left guard, but you could do it if you really, if you're a real man. But point is, like, it's T. Higgins and it's Tyler Boyd. That's it, right? That's who their top guys are now.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that AJ, yeah, and I lost on that the debate for sure. I'll have to take that L. Yeah, there's games where he looked like he may have had something, but then even in the games where he's productive, like, he didn't have that extra gear. Like, right. There was a game, I think it was the Cleveland game. There's a play in the end zone. He comes down with that catch more often than not, but he just couldn't. He just can't get that separation. You get a good corner on him. You got Joe Hayden on him this past weekend, and he just can't beat that. And, you know, T. Higgins is the man. Tyler Boyd's got a future. They need to get parts around, and they didn't have Mixon yesterday. I think that kind of hurt them a little bit more. He mattered. Geo didn't do a whole lot. Dropped a pass late on. That was the play where he's at the very end where Burrow's limping off and they kick the field goal down 36-7. You're like, come on, what are we doing here? But, you know, why is he in there in the first place? Why, you know, are we going to kill him just for the sake of a field goal? Come on. Yeah, it's tough. But the thing is, they, you know, one side overcame the weather. One, you know, the Bengals were the team coming off the bye, too. You would have figured, okay, they'd be all jonesed up, ready. I know they had some COVID stuff, but they're just, they weren't ready in any shape or form for this game. The Steelers just overwhelmed them.
Yeah, they played like they were, like, fully symptomatic with COVID, the entire team.
There was something about it. Baltimore, New England was the other weather game. And that, you know, you could see at the end, I mean, pretty transparent how much of an impact that would have. But, you know, New England adjusted pretty damn well. They had it kind of dialed in offense. And you're starting to see things here. I talked about the Bengals and their cornerback issues. The Ravens had some issues on their defensive line. No Calais Campbell yesterday. And I think another guy that got hurt in the middle of early in that game, and they couldn't stop the pass from running it right down their throat. I mean, every time on first down, they were getting 8 yards.
Yeah, Beasthead and Damon Harris looked good. And, I mean, New England, when you think about them laying 7 on the road, I don't even think the weather was that big of a factor. I mean, obviously it hampered the passing game, but for both sides, it's not like Lamar Jackson is Joe Montana in his prime. It's like neither one of those guys is really going to lead with the passing. You know, it's mostly scrambling and making a pass play as needed. And so it was a game that the Ravens were suited to play, right? Lamar Jackson is a guy who can take off and beat you in getting those 5 and 6 yard consistent gains and just be unstoppable. And he did okay. I mean, Lamar Jackson wasn't terrible and he made some good runs, but some annoying alarm going off. Do you hear that in the background?
Nope.
Oh, good. That's a very directional mic. It's working. So he had some good runs and stuff. He did throw that one pick. The guy was covered. It was kind of a foolish throw. But it was just, you're right, New England just had a good game plan. And a lot of times you watch football and you're like, what does New England have? You know, they had like Jacoby Myers, Cam Newton, Rex Burkhead, Damien Harris. It's very kind of uninspiring. But, you know, remember there's this rule that if you get 4 chances to get 10 yards, and if you get it, you get a new set of downs. And the Patriots really seem to understand that rule very well. And they know how to take – and the Colts did too on Thursday night, which we didn't talk about. Like, the Titans were better. Like, A.J. Brown had a drop, and Derrick Henry was gashing him for 20-yard runs. But who cares? The Colts were going on fourth down like 6 times, and they kept converting fourth downs. It's just like if you can just keep getting 3 yards every play, you get a first down every time. You can't be stopped. And there's something to that where – the sort of grinded out style, short passes, no mistakes, consistent early down, 4 or 5 yards, 6 yards on first down, it wins games. Yeah. And I think that because we're like so enmeshed in stats and yards per play and indicators, like overall per play averages matter, but like we lose sight of the fact that like sometimes football is just about smashing the other team for that 3 or 4 yards consistently. And who cares that the other team's making the dynamic, amazing plays? In the end, they made a mistake or two. Obviously, the Titans got a punt blocked and a bunch of other stuff happened. But the Patriots just seemed to like know exactly how to beat this particular team.
Yeah, and you know, there's a critical sequence. The end of the first half, you know, the Pats had like a super easy drive to get that second touchdown. Like, it took them like four plays.
You know,
like,
right.
And then the Ravens are turning around. They're driving the two-minute drill. They're making progress. And Lamar threw that one bad pick where he targeted Hollywood Brown, who could not get open all day long.
Right.
You know, Jackson had him smothered. Like, smothered. Right. You could barely even see him. Like the
he might not be a mutter.
A previous
he's not a mutter.
Just ended up in an incomplete. It's like, who's he throwing it to? Oh, there's Brown. He's hiding behind him there. First of all, he's small. Secondly, yeah, right. He had yeah. no separation. I'm like, he's nothing special. I can't start Hollywood Brown anymore.
Well, no, a lot of people are saying that. I think it's that he's not a mutter. Like, he's a fast track guy. So put him on a clean track, good grass or, like, you know, turf.
Yeah.
And he's ridiculously fast. But if you're, like, in the mud, maybe he's just not – he doesn't have that, like, lightning maybe. Speed when it's slippery and rainy and he doesn't have that spring. I'll say a thing about him is he's going to go off again this year. It's just going to be on your bench. Yeah. That's the problem with him.
Yeah,
now.
That's right. He's going to Rojo you.
Rojo'd me pretty bad.
Yeah.
Two out of three leagues I benched him, one for Jerick McKinnon, another one for Jonathan Taylor. No, it wasn't Jonathan Taylor. Thank God. No, it was Jonathan Taylor. And that, you know, that's horrible. But, it is what it is. I mean, that's the reason why Rojo's not a third-round pick or fourth-round pick. The draft is because he didn't have the stability. And not only do the non-stable guys lose the job easily, they also are hard to start. And it's why he was a seventh-round pick and should have been a seventh-round pick.
Yeah, and especially when you've got Bruce Hot Hands Arians is, you know, the guy that's making that decision any given week. So that is super frustrating. But, you know, the thing is, that interception that Jackson threw, and he should never have thrown that ball. Brown was never open once on that
right.
play.
Wasn't open, yeah.
And, you know, just killed a drive. They were going to at least get points.
Yep.
Yeah. And because you got Justin Tucker, who's super automatic, even in this driving rain, right down the middle.
If I have Justin Tucker in every league, and I was bummed. You know, I had the Pats with the points, but I was like, the Pats are going to cover this. I want Justin Tucker to hit this.
Yeah, I'm going to get five me another points field goal. Out of this. Yeah.
A five-point field goal he's going to drill. And, you know, the thing about Tucker is I took him early in a bunch of leagues, and he's great, never misses. But, A, the Ravens' offense has not been as advertised. And, B, everyone else in the league has caught up to Justin Tucker. Not entirely, but like 90%. So next year I'm not going to take Tucker where I did because he was an anomaly. He was the only guy doing that. You had – what's the guy's name in Tyler Bass?
He had 54. Plus, yeah.
No, but they weren't just 50-plus. It wasn't like 51, 53. It was 54, 55, and 58 in the first half.
Yeah.
It's bananas. Graham Gano just got a contract extension for the Giants. Do you know why? Because he's made 21 out of 22 field goals this year, and the one he missed was from 57. That's
Jason
how good
Sanders
he's been.
Hasn't missed this year for Miami. I mean,
I thought he missed – did he miss one? Somebody missed one for the first time.
Maybe he missed one. Maybe I missed that, but
I think he missed one for the first time.
He hadn't missed. But point is, he's awesome, you know. And
they all are. Will Lutz. I mean, there's a million guys kicking from 57, 58. These guys are kicking at 90% on the year, and that's including 55 yard attempts.
Right.
It used to be guys were at 80%, and you know they never even tried a 50 yarder. The kicking is so out of control, and so Tucker started this wave, but it's. You know, that you can't say he's, you know, he's better, but he's better by, you know, barely better. And his offense isn't that great. So I'd still take him as the first kicker, but it's like by, you know, I wouldn't take him in the 13th round. I'd take him in the 18th round, 17th round now.
Yeah, you're right. Sanders missed yesterday. I somehow
finally
that escaped my attention, but he's, but still, you know, Bass, at least he's missed like eight kicks. So, you know, but like Sanders is 20 for 21. I mean, you know, that's pretty impressive. 5 for 5 from 50, 7 for 8 from 40 to 49.
These guys are hitting at a ridiculous pace from distance. This is like if the NBA were shooting threes and they were shooting 50% from three, you know, it was like shooting a two. It was, you know, it's like, oh yeah. Or it's like if Steph Curry, you know, it's those guys who are, 40, 50, 90 was the thing in the NBA. 40 from three, 50 from the floor, and 90 overall. It's like that, where you're shooting a ton of threes and you're 50 overall. Like that's insane. Like you should never shoot 50% from the floor if you're shooting that many threes. But these guys just got that good at shooting threes, a few of them. And that's how these kickers are. It's like a new world that we're in.
It is. So what I wonder is, you know, are they training? You know, obviously they're doing something that's training differently. They're something has changed in terms of the evolution of kicking, and it's happened recently.
Very recently.
All of a sudden, all these guys are so much better. And, you know, yeah. Tucker is, he may have led the way, and maybe they've copied some of his training methods. Who knows? But the fact is, they're developing differently, because when so many guys are like that,
right?
Something it's like the drive line of kickers, you know, right. Where all of a sudden they've got more kicking velocity or something.
Yeah. But I'm going to investigate and get whatever that pill is that they're taking. You know, I may not be just kicking that gets enhanced, Jeff.
Might be, Chris. Might be. Yeah. It's never too late to try to improve yourself there.
Is there? Exactly. You never know. Absolutely. There could be unpredictable things. There's unpredictable things, you know.
But yes, then everybody's going to catch up to you, and then it will be.
That's right. Again. Well, you never know, though. I mean, you know, there might be a lag for a couple of years while the general public gets in on it.
That's right. Quick note before I move on. Smart sports bettors always know where to find the best odds before placing a bet, and that's why smart bettors use PropSwap. You can always find the best odds on PropSwap because you're buying directly from other bettors, like yourself. See a ticket you like, but think the price is too high? Submit a bid for a price you think is fair, then buy it. PropSwap sellers are always willing to negotiate, and we all know bookies never will. And for a limited time, our listeners can get up to $500 in bonus cash. Just use promo code ROTO500. That's promo code ROTO500. And PropSwap will match your first deposit up to $500. Become a smarter sports bettor today. Go to PropSwap.com or download the PropSwap app. Talking here with Chris Liss. I'm Jeff Erickson, recapping week 10. And a lot of stuff that's happened so far. And Chris, want to talk some injuries. Drew Brees gets hurt yesterday, bruised ribs, and they said it was an accumulation. It wasn't just that one hit that was a shaky call. You know, the guy was full
that's
weight
so,
on.
That was but so nutless monkey.
He didn't.
Yeah, and like, come on, don't treat Brees like the eggshell plaintiff. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, they don't treat Newton like that. And I'm not saying it's like a race thing or anything. I'm just saying it's just like Newton's a football player. He takes a hit. You know, obviously if he gets a helmet to helmet, they'll call it. But he takes a big hit when he's moving around. They don't give him ticky tack things. Don't treat Brees just because he's small and slight. He's
and
playing the NFL.
Yeah, exactly.
An esteemed veteran with all that. You know, don't do that. You know, this is the NFL. You suit up in the NFL. Don't say then, look, he's played 20 years in the NFL with incredible durability and whatever. It is true, but only if he gets the same rules as everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, if that guy gets smacked around, he gets smacked around. You know, he's not a baby. He's a grown man. Like, that was really annoying, and it was definitely because of who he was. There's no way they call that. Even if it's like Andy Dalton, they don't call that.
No, especially if it's Andy Dalton. The Bengals never get
Andy Dalton gets absolutely abused and nobody cares.
Yeah, Burrow got – there were two hits on Burrow in the two-minute drill in the second quarter where he got hit late. You know, got hit – like one was late. Another was like full body – you know, weight on top of him sort of thing. They didn't call either. They called a low hit against the Bengals on Ben on another play where he got knocked into him. And nope.
Ben looked so slow.
Before it's – you know. But
Ben is
some
so
teams
slow,
never
though.
Get those calls, it feels like. But anyways.
But Jeff, you watch Ben. He is so slow. He moves so poorly. I'm watching that guy. He just has nothing. I mean, he threw the ball well, but he's slower than Rivers, I think, at this point.
And yet, they couldn't get him down. They couldn't knock him down at all. It was crazy. He'd limp his way into, you know, open space and connect every time. Yeah. It was just repeating the same movie that I've seen for the last 10 plus years. And it's over and over. He always carves us. There's a stat. The last 28 games against the Steelers, the Bengals versus the Steelers have scored 23 times in the final 2 minutes of a half. 23 out of 28. That's crazy. Yeah. You just even have the ball.
Right. That's right. I mean, they should show of the times they've had the ball. It's probably 23 for 23 or something insane.
Probably. It's ludicrous. They just complete ownership of us, complete other ownership. Okay. But Brees is going to miss some time. And I'll tell you what, they didn't look good after.
No, Jameis looked disconnected. He looked no confidence. He was having trouble handling the snap. Even like handoffs were a bit of an adventure. Like he did not look good. Now I'm sure with a week of practice, it'll be better. He's played a lot of quarterback in the NFL. He's not some guy who's you know, he's played for 5 years as a starter in Tampa Bay, so he knows how to play quarterback. But it's a new system. There's some pressure being on arguably the best team in the league. I think he'll be okay, and I think you should pick him up. But it did look shaky, you have to say.
And there's a more Taysom Hill than we're even used to. So I might have to rank Taysom Hill in my rankings this week. I don't know. I mean, the thing is, you know, he's been very involved the last couple weeks. They love themselves some Taysom Hill. I always love it when a Taysom Hill play goes bad. Is that bad?
No, everyone hates Taysom Hill. Yeah. Everybody hates that dude. The thing about Taysom, he's just so eager. He's like the Scott Hansen of quarterbacks. You know, he's like so excited to get on the field. It's like it's a little annoying, and everyone gets so excited. The announcers get excited. It's like Rudy the movie, you know, but like every time. is a little bit stupid, but he's pretty good at what he does. It's funny how like quarterback is really a hard position. It's actually not hard if you're a quarterback, and it seems like it's never been easier to play quarterback, but then it's hard if you're not really a quarterback. So it's like they signed Jameis because they know that Taysom Hill cannot be a backup quarterback. He just doesn't. He's Tim Tebow. Right. He literally is Tim Tebow in his prime. He just doesn't have the quarterback skills to go through reads and make the, you know, he can do like one thing, get the ball and run really fast and hard, make a cut or pitch it to somebody or throw to the guy he knows he's throwing to ahead of time. But it's just funny that like, he just doesn't have the goods to just be the quarterback.
Yeah. Well, and some of that might be also kind of evolution too, because he's trained in this hybrid role and he's not being developed like a typical quarterback either. So he can't pick
that. Why wouldn't they? I mean, they never they paid him all this money. You'd think, oh, in addition to all these trick plays, he's also our backup quarterback. That would make, you know, perfect sense. Like Jalen Hurts is the backup, may actually be the third string. It's hard to say with the Eagles, but probably the backup. And he'll occasionally, not as much as Hill, get used. But it seems kind of a luxury to have three players who are the quarterback. And it would seem like if Hill were capable of, I mean, Winston's no superstar. I mean, they brought him in and made him the backup when Breeze got hurt.
Right.
Because Hill clearly can't do it. I mean, they would have just used Hill if they could.
I think you're right. But it's kind of funny. Like, Jameis is kind of like Dalton in that, you know, how veteran that we can just slide right in. There'll be no drop-off. Right. And
there was a drop-off.
Yeah. Well, it was one half of one game, and true. I don't want to get too, you know, I mean, he'll get a week of practice in, and we'll see. But it was shakier than I expected. Way shakier.
And, you know, the thing is, against an opponent that was missing a ton of their players on defense in the Niners.
But the defense dominated them. I mean, dominate, but played pretty well. I mean, nobody did anything. Yeah. You know, Kamara got some receiving yards. Michael Thomas, dude, that guy, like, what's wrong with can't guard Mike? I mean, it's like, can't get open. Seven targets, two for 27. What a lost season for him.
You know, the thing is, in the run-up to the week, he was limited in practice Wednesday and Thursday again. I mean, he's still not right. It's kind of like when Kamara came back last year. You know, you're kind of like, all right, he's not the same guy. And also, then you take away Breeze, it's even worse because, you know, a lot of Thomas is timing, right? You know,
yeah,
precise route Bridgewater, throwing a guy open, and you get a substandard quarterback, you don't have that timing.
But he got his with Bridgewater last year. I mean, it was a teeny drop-off. So Bridgewater's just more, you know, Bridgewater is kind of like Breeze. He's like the short throws. He's accurate in the short areas. He doesn't make a lot of stupid plays.
Yeah.
He's more similar than Winston. And Winston's kind of the opposite kind of quarterback.
Next 3 weeks for the Saints, Falcons at Broncos at Falcons. You know, these are
good matchups.
You know, Winston might be worth something in, you know, a full week of practice. Keep in mind, he's not getting reps in practice that much.
Right.
Although Breeze was limited with the shoulder in his own right this week, too. So maybe there's something to that. But anyways, I thought that was noteworthy. News out of Carolina right before the show, Adam Schefter was saying that Christian McCaffrey is unlikely to play this week against Detroit. And again, they lost. They're down to 3-7. Any little fleeting playoff hopes they once had when they were 3-2, those are gone. You know, they've been on a big losing streak. Bridgewater's banged up. Their defense got shredded yesterday. I could see them just saying with McCaffrey, okay, unless we have you're 100%, you're not playing. Period.
Yeah, I mean, there's really no reason to push it. I mean, players like to play McCaffrey. You know, they just want to play. They want to accumulate career numbers. They want to just do what they do.
Yeah.
But But there's one thing. Like, I don't think they will shut him down if he would play. I don't think they're going to say we're out of the playoffs. He's totally healthy, but we're going to shut him down. But I could see a situation where it's like Michael Thomas is kind of coming back and maybe he's not quite himself.
Right.
They're not, I don't think there's a point of playing him in that situation. And he might not play. If his shoulder's like okay, but not great, yeah. Would play if playoffs were on the line, they will sit him out. So you figure like that could be a few more weeks. And you're right. I mean, at what point is it just like, well, the shoulder's really just needs rest for about a month or two and then it'll be 100%. Might be the end of the year. Sometimes these things end up needing surgery. They're like, yeah, you end up needing surgery at the end of the year.
Yeah, that's true. And it might even be like, okay, this is normal to play through this, and it's normal to get surgery at the end of the year. It's just the progression we do in the NFL. But it does affect players. And some players are more affected, hurt than others. Some can, that 90% can still do what they do. And McCaffrey might be that way. He played really well against the Chiefs. But yep. Again,
he hurt the shoulder later in the game, I think. I think he was healthy for a bit.
That's true. All right, a couple other things we want to talk about. But before we do that, let's share a quick note from our friends with BetMGM. Sports bettors know that magic happens when you turn a hunch into action and apply the right amount of expertise. That's why BetMGM has teamed up with RotoWire to offer new BetMGM customers a free 6-month RotoWire subscription when they place their first bet. Register on the BetMGM app or website, and once you make your first sports wager, you'll receive a season's length of RotoWire's unmatched sports insights. Find out why BetMGM is the king of sportsbooks by signing up and placing your first bet today. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager, Colorado, Indiana, New Jersey, Nevada, Tennessee, welcome Tennessee, and West Virginia only. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado and Nevada and 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey and West Virginia. In Tennessee, call or text the Red Line at 800-889-9789. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. Promotional offer not available in Nevada. All right. Thanks to BetMGM for that. Couple other games I wanted to talk about. Notably, the Arizona-Buffalo game. Can't believe we haven't brought that up too much yet. It's just what an ending. I know we mentioned a little bit at the end, but first of all, Allen with an incredible throw to Hopkins. To Diggs with the go-ahead score late. That was a really nice 2-minute drive that they pulled off. Some crazy stuff that happened earlier in that game. But that was a sweet drive. Only to be topped by the Hail Mary, which just – you should never lose on a Hail Mary, but what a perfect grab by Hopkins. I mean, unbelievably strong hands.
So I think the throw is almost sicker than the catch.
I agree.
Because he's under pressure and he's running to the left, and then he has to stop and chuck it back toward the middle of the field a little bit. And he's got to get it into the end zone, which is, 50 yards or whatever, 45, 50 yards. And right. He's got to do that with one step and a fling. He can't like wind up and really throw it. So it was the fact that he just got that into a catchable zone. You see quarterbacks running for their life on that fourth and whatever, or time running out, and they throw it out of bounds or out of the end zone or something. And you're like, dude, come on. But that I see them do that when they're not even under that much duress. He was under so much duress, got it in a place where it was still a Hail Mary, but somebody could catch it. And Hopkins, I've seen him make acrobatic catches. I've seen Odell Beckham make acrobatic catches. But this was more like Clint Eastwood in The Unforgiven, where he's just like everyone's panicking and he just like calmly shoots and kills them.
Yeah.
Everyone's jumping off balance, reaching, flailing. And he just like calmly puts his hands up, secures the ball, squeezes it, and pulls it down. Doesn't drop it. Like, it was just very simple. The dude just doesn't lose focus, has complete poise, control, and great hands, strong hands, and just grips it, and that's it.
Yeah.
And all these guys are reaching for it, but they're all just kind of like panic jumping, flailing, and he's just like calmly in the middle of the hole. There's like three Bills around him, by the way. There was no other Cardinals there.
Right.
And he just goes up and gets it. And he's not even that tall. He's like 6'1". I don't even know if he jumped or just – did he even jump? He just kind of –
Yeah, he did. He high-pointed it. Part of the thing that made it so amazing.
It's just like – it was no bobble even. He just kind of like got his hands around it and
pulled it down.
In. Yep. Yeah.
and cradled it against his belly and all that. It was crazy. You're right. The throw was incredible too. Everything about that sequence was pretty wild. Earlier in the game, the Bills had the lucky interception off of with Fitzgerald's hands on the ground and all that. They had to review it. And
I was so lucky and so stupid.
Yeah.
Like, it was a bad throw. It was behind him. Okay. It was a great play to even get his hands under it. But just unluckily, you know, and it might have hit the ground, but there's no angle at which you could prove that it hit the ground. So It was legit. I mean, the call was right.
Yeah.
It's just one of those bad bounces. And they were up, they're four and they were driving in Arizona, in Buffalo territory, and would have probably got a field goal at least and maybe more. But the thing is, after that, the Bills punted and Arizona punted again, and then the Bills got the touchdown. So you can't blame it on that, but it was just as kind of fluky as the Hail Mary in its own way changed things. It was a crazy game. I mean, the Bills kicker made 54 plus yard field goals in the half. It was just a crazy game altogether.
Yeah, and Kingsbury almost cost the Arizona this game. They settled for that super short field goal on the first drive of the game. Again, he's been doing that a lot this year. And when you got this offense, just run the play. It's going to cost them another game. It cost them the game last week against Miami. It cost them, I think, a little bit against Detroit. Murray was just bad in that game too. But this is a team that is on the cusp of being really, really good. But they're also just this close to like giving away games, and I think it's going to come back to haunt them in a big game later this year.
They're interesting. There's so many teams like us. Like the Bills are one of them. The Seahawks are kind of one of them, although they look worse now. The Cardinals are one of them. These herky jerky, crazy teams. I mean, even the Ravens and Patriots. Like I don't know, you know, how good the Patriots are, but they may get back in this. The Patriots actually did have a credible offense. They had a rhythm to their offense actually yesterday. But
yeah,
these teams are just slinging it around, like run around. The quarterback runs around like crazy, makes a play here, makes a play there. I mean, there's only one Chiefs. There's not that many teams that now, like, you know, the Saints were like that, where they would just drive methodically down the field. You know who's going to be insane is the Bucs. The Bucs defense is overrated. I don't think they're as good as they showed early in the year, and they've been exposed. Even Carolina early on lit them up. But the Giants should have lit them up, but for a couple misthrows by Danny Dimes, and of course the Saints did. But that offense, Brady missed two long open touchdowns, one to Gronk, one to Antonio Brown. He still had three touchdowns passing, one rushing, 300-something yards. And Antonio Brown and Gronk are not 35. They're 31. These are Hall of Famers. Antonio Brown, if not for the off-field stuff, would easily be a Hall of Famer. And Gronk is a Hall of Famer. So you got two Hall of Famers and then two Pro Bowlers in their prime. I mean, Mike Evans is always hurt this year, but he and Godwin have been banged up. But Godwin looks healthy now. That is like the craziest configuration of talent ever. There's four guys that are just ridiculous. And Brady may not be peak Brady, but he's still pretty good. And the running backs aren't bad either, and the line's pretty good. It's just it's insane what the Bucs have.
Yeah, they just need to avoid the Saints. You know, the Saints are their kryptonite. But
that's true.
And then they lost that Thursday night game against the Bears, and that was a weird game too. So that one I'm more willing to write off as kind of a one-off there. But it's so funny. Our narrative changes back. Like, okay, well, now that the Bucs look like the contender again. And the thing is, it's because there's not that one dominant team. I mean, the Rams could easily be the best team in the NFC for
Their offense sucks. Their offense sucks.
It does suck. But their defense is so good.
Their defense is good, but defense won't – I don't think defense is going to carry the day in 2020.
Defense like, you would have to. Yeah, I agree.
I mean, in the 80s, you had the Giants and the Bears, and in the 2000s, you had the Ravens. And you had the Bucks and you had the Broncos that year that Peyton won the Super Bowl for the second time. Mm-hmm. And those defenses just carried the day. There was really not much offensively on most of those teams.
And the rules were different then, too.
Yes. You could kill the quarterback. You could make more contact with the receivers. It's way different. Yeah. I just don't think in this day and age that the defense can carry the day. It helps to have a good defense. And obviously you see what happens to Russell Wilson or any quarterback when they get repeated pressure. But I think maybe the Rams have enough offense to with the defense, but I don't think the Rams are a serious contender. I think they're good. I mean, there's nobody like so good, but I think you need to have an offense that's pretty darn good to survive. Last year, the Niners defense was pretty good. And they held Chiefs to 10 points with 10 minutes left, and then they just couldn't hold it together. They didn't have enough offense to keep Mahomes off the
Garoppolo
field.
Garoppolo hits that throw to Sanders, though, last year. The game's all over.
Right, which is it. They didn't have the quarterback to make the throw. You know, they didn't have the offense.
And, I mean, that, and they didn't, and, that was their margin right there.
But that was, but it shouldn't have come down to that one, you know, one play.
Yeah.
Because they had so many chances to get a few first downs and win the game, and they just couldn't, you know, get, they couldn't keep Mahomes off the field. And finally, you know, the dam broke. They held him down for 50 minutes and they couldn't do it. It's hard to win mostly on defense, I think, unless you have enough offense. The Steelers have enough offense, it looks like. We'll see what shape Ben's in by the end of the year, another month of beatings.
Right.
But I think so. The Rams, maybe they get something together offensively. I mean, that three-headed monster running back is a disaster for fantasy. Now it's like unplayable at this point.
Well, yeah, it is. You know, it was more convenient when Akers was buried.
Right.
Then, you know, but Henderson got a touchdown at least. Brown got two, but the yards just aren't there. If you don't score, you know, so you're completely touchdown dependent on having any sort of value.
And you don't know who's going to get it. Could be Akers getting two touchdowns next week. I mean, we just have no idea who's going to get that, and it's not predictable. And I just think that's, you just kind of like, okay, those guys are just emergency. They're like Jonathan Taylor. It's Jonathan Taylor, Jordan Wilkins, Nyheim Hines. Nyheim Hines had a huge game, but are you confident in him going forward? Oh, probably not.
What a headache. I'm getting a headache just thinking about that again. I got my rankings tomorrow. Yay.
Yeah, those are just crapshoot. But then the Ravens are even worse. Ravens are totally unusual.
Yeah.
Because Lamar Jackson's a fourth running back. They have four guys.
Yeah.
Like imagine a four-way committee and trying to figure that out.
Yeah. I'll say there was one positive development, and that was Detroit. DeAndre Swift unequivocally was the man and looked the part too. It's funny how that works. You give this, like, you spent this high draft pick that's got a lot of hype and he's shown flashes. Give him a workload and weird things happen. Oh, you scored a lot of points. Weird. Strange. Huh.
It's weird how it takes. It's like Matt Patricia comes around to the obvious 10 games into the season. And it's like, come on. Like, everybody would have said, just start him right away. You didn't need to sign Adrian Peterson. Why does it take you 10 weeks to get to where everybody was in week one?
But and it's, he did kind of come around after their bye week. The Jacksonville game, it was a coming out game for Swift, but then we went back to like a third. Meanwhile, on the other side of the ball, football team really disappointed me. Their pass defense, first of all, was bad. Stafford carved him up without Kenny Golladay.
Well, there are some cheap stuff. Chase Young got like a rough in the passer. Like, there's so many little tiny.
Yeah.
So many like drive extenders. Somehow
they failed to solve the Marvin Hall problem.
Scott Jensen, very tough crowd. Very tough crowd.
Come on, man. But on
your
offense,
only good pun of all time, and he doesn't even give you credit.
I know. Thank you for appreciating art when you see it.
No problem.
Yeah.
No problem. I'm a connoisseur.
JD McKissick just got another target while we were talking. Alex Smith was like the super check down guy and until like the second half, and they finally went away from it. But he got like 15 targets for 43 yards. That's just wasting plays.
Yeah, it's like, well, I mean, they're like handoffs mostly that aren't going anywhere.
Right.
I don't know. They had 391 yards, had a ton of attempts. The whole thing was kind of dumb, like that the last drive for them.
Forever.
It took forever, and also it was like kept getting aided by all these cheap penalties, and it was sort of like, let's just let the refs email us the result. Let's not let anyone get hurt. You know, it's like, why are we watching this? Prater mercifully put an end to it. I had the football team plus 3.5, so I was really glad for Prater to win by 3 and just take the risk of overtime out of it. So it wasn't the best game on the slate. Say that much.
That football team's 2-minute drill which started with like two and change, literally took like 20 minutes because of all the penalties and incompletions and all that. Just it dragged. And never once were they threatening the end zone. Not even once did they even come anywhere near throwing to the end zone. They settled for like the 45-yard field goal. And, you know, it's Dustin Hopkins. He has not graduated into the good kick.
No, he's still from 2012 kicking school.
Yeah, he's definitely one of the old school types.
So where do you put Swift now? I mean, like, would you take Swift or Miles Sanders rest of the season?
Sanders, but
Are you sure about that?
It's closer. I mean, this was Sanders' first game back. So I want to,
He looked healthy. I watched the game. He looked healthy. He looked perfect. He dropped a pass, maybe two. He got vultured at the goal line by Corey Clement, but he looked fine. I mean, he moved well. Yeah. It wasn't like he didn't look sluggish, but you know, I mean, the Eagles offense is pretty bad.
Wentz is pretty bad.
He's on the ropes, Wentz. I mean, he tries hard, but it's ugly. You know,
Some of this is familiarity too. They just played the Giants 3 weeks ago. Right. Bradbury's really good. I think that's.
They tried it at 4th and 10. It was awesome. They tried to throw it. Bradbury just easily broke it up.
3rd and 10 4th and 10. It was like, what are you doing? Go anywhere else.
Yeah.
But
and you know who's also panned out? I got to defend my guy Dave Gettleman. He signs Bradbury. That's a great signing. I mean, every team in the league wishes they did that. I mean, Slay's been good for the Eagles. There's a few guys. You know, Jalen Ramsey trading for him was obviously a good move. But Leonard Williams has been good.
Yeah.
You know, Leonard Williams is good. And they
the second
like
round pick?
No, it was a 4th round pick, I think, or a 3rd. It wasn't a second.
It was a second for some reason.
No, it was not a second. Okay. But that was Mohamed Sanu that the Patriots did.
They traded
this pick, and they're like, why are you trading for him? You know, he's a free agent, you know? But then they franchised him. They're just paying $16 million. But they're like, you know, Gettleman's like, this guy's really good. He was like the 6th overall pick a few years ago, and he saw something, and he'd been hurt a bunch. And now this guy is like borderline dominant. You know, he's been good. And so, you know, that team, you know, Joe Judge is punting on 4th and short and plus territory for God knows what reason. But they play. I mean, they got blown out by the Niners that one game. But mostly they're in it with Tampa. They're in it with the Rams. They beat the Eagles. They should have beat them twice. You know, this is not.
They're in it with the Cowboys. They should have beat the Cowboys.
Well, the Cowboys, though. The first half is with Prescott, at least.
At least. But, yeah. I was going to say, you know, that almost looks like a bad loss now.
Yeah, it's like, it's disgraceful. I mean, the football team could have beat them twice. The football team went for a touchdown. It went for the two on the first game, failed.
Yeah.
And the second game, they barely beat them, but the football team had 5 turnovers and none. So, I mean, it's not like they've been dominating anybody, but they are a credible NFL team, and they've beat the Eagles and they swept the Reds, the football team. And if they beat Dallas in the second matchup, they'll probably be favored. Although Dallas's defense played better last week. They may have the division tie break too.
Yeah. That's
so
possible.
It's in play.
Yeah. Eagles still get one more chance to beat, the Cowboys though. So there is that. But yeah, they're in play. One of those teams will be in the playoffs. We'll just find out about that. What are you going to work on East Coast offense this week? Got anything in mind yet?
Yeah, I might write about how, you know, when you're a kid and you watch football, like it's just very simple. Like you just take it at face value. You're like, okay, this team won. They had more points than the other. And the touchdowns are really important. Like you're like, oh, he scored a touchdown. It's like a really big deal. And you kind of think the team that won is better because they won, right? It's just simple. You watch the game. I remember being like 7. I mean, this team's better. And it was just really cool to watch the games, and you get a lot of satisfaction from it. But then you learn a little bit more and forget about all the business with the reviews and replays and ticky-tack and non-calls and all that. But even just like the indicators, you start being like, oh, wow, this team won, but actually they had a block punt, and which when you're a kid, you're like, that's a great play. They blocked a punt.
Yeah.
Just taking it at face value. But like when you're older, you're like, no, they shouldn't have won. They got a block punt and 2 fumbles. Like that's just lucky. And you start to look at it like that. And I was just thinking out, like, you know, indicators are about predicting the future. The only reason indicators matter at all, because we don't score games in indicators. We don't score it in yards per play. It's not like the team that had more yards per play. So the team that has more points is the metric. That's the only metric that matters in the game. But if you're going to predict tomorrow's game or next week's game, then better than whoever won, who had more points, is these indicators, right? So we start saying, ooh, it's the indicators that are important. I want to be good at predicting, so I'm going to look at these, not the points. But people screw it up because they're like, during the game, they're like, well, they won, but it's crap because of these indicators. And you're like, yeah, but dude, those indicators are only predictive for the future. The actual event itself is not something it already happened. So the things that would predict the event once the event has happened are stupid and irrelevant. And as a result, I feel like we're not able to watch a game and enjoy it as much because we're constantly looking at things that don't matter for the present event. The indicators only point in one direction, forward in time. They point forward. So if you're in the present game, those indicators are totally meaningless. It's just what happened on the field.
Not only that, but, you know, that fake punt that worked, that's a fluke. You know what? They worked hard on that. They planned that. They practiced that. You know, the little things like that. They teach their players how to strip the ball better. You know, things, you know, there is, fumbles are luck, turnovers are luck, but some players are better at that. Some coaches are better at that. And that stuff is where you win on the margins a lot of times, too.
But also, even executing a 30-yard out is, 30-yard, that's pretty deep. 15-yard out is luck. I mean, if you don't, you know, I mean, it's skill, but like the defender has to be set up properly, the ball has to not be tipped at the line. You have to have enough time to throw. I mean, there's luck involved in some of these things that are even skill, right? Just as you say, they practice. It may be what we're saying. We say luck over skill, but this is more repeatable. We can compete this. They can complete this pass reliably. Now, 6 out of 10 times, not 10 out of 10, though. It's lucky they made it this time and not another time. You can reduce everything to sort of luck and probability. And, oh, and that punt fake is, you know, that they're never going to try that again. It's not repeatable. It's a one-time thing. But I think all that, it misses the point, because all of what's luck versus skill, that whole debate that we even have, is only relevant in the context of predicting, right? Because when you predict the future, you want to know what's repeatable. You want to know what's not a one-off. Right. But every game is a one-off. It's over the game. You can't start predicting stuff. Oh, but this wouldn't have predicted the future. Well, who cares? That's the future. You can use that to handicap next week's game. But in this particular game, the result is the only thing. What should have been, would have been, could have been, is over. And so I feel like, in a way, the naive way of watching the game, not only is it's more enjoyable, but in some ways it's more accurate, because we're not missing the present for what it means for the future. It's like being a person who can never live in the moment of what's actually happening and always looking at what this moment means for the next moment. Mm-hmm. We're never sitting. And so I feel like you get into this with a lot of different things in life and politics and everything else, but it's like sometimes the indicator is only worth it as a predictive tool. It has no meaning in the context of the event itself, especially when the event is over or going on. It only matters for the future. And so I just thinking about some of these games that are super ugly, or the Patriots, the way they slogged it out in that way, and you think, well, that's not a good team, that can't, and you start thinking, well, but you know, they always manage to figure out ways to make it ugly like that if they need to. And also there's the first down rule and the fact that you can get a 3-yard gain every time. Anyway, it's something along those lines. Maybe I'll have to scrap it if I can't articulate it properly, but that's what I'm working on.
All right. Very good. Well, good stuff there. Want to thank everybody for listening. Want to thank Prop Swap and BetMGM for their sponsorship. Coming up tomorrow, we got Joe Bartel and Jake Letarski going to do Free Agent Tuesday. Please, as always, subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. We thank you. Take care. Have a great day.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this. But Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.